This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Hey, history fans, welcome in. This Day in History, lineupmedia.fm. Tony Hubert with you, my partner Armand Kachigian, brought to you by Amazon.com and Audible.com. Today, it's the events of the 18th of August.
Not quite.
Throughout the annals of time, but I have a feeling we have some housekeeping
to address. Again, mistaken. More solecisms.
Really? How was I mistaken?
Well, you said something about the Spey or Spray River, which is the Bridge of Sighs, Glinicker.
Yeah, yeah.
It's over the Havel River.
It's over the Havel.
Apparently, H-A-V-E-L.
What is the Spey a river in Berlin?
I don't know. Never heard of it. I've heard of the Graf Spey. And the pole sitter I was trying to figure out was Shipwreck Kelly. I think he was up there for like 27 days or something, or even more. Maybe it was almost a month and a half. Something. He was in there a long time up on that pole.
It's the river. It's the Spree. S-P-R-E-E.
Okay.
Yeah, I was off a letter there. Yeah, good catch.
The Bridge of Spies is not over.
And it's not even over that river.
Yeah, Kennedy's girlfriends were Fiddle and Faddle.
Fiddle and Faddle!
Yeah, I know, his swimming pool.
They used to come down to the pool.
Yeah, the naiads.
And a bathing suit optional.
Prohibited. there was no option. No bathing suits.
JFK.
All right. Pelota was the ball. You know, we established that the cesta was the little basket thing they use in Hialeah. But the pelota.
Yeah,
I knew there was a pelota.
So
the cesta
in Hialeah that we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah.
You kind of slide your arm into it.
Yeah.
And the ball is the pelota.
Pelota.
Okay.
It's got to pronounce the L, right?
Oh, man.
It's two L's. You don't pronounce it.
I love watching Hialeah. It's fun. So haven't done it for years.
Now you may proceed.
Yeah, all right.
Now we're contemporaneous.
All right. So on the 18th of August, the events, who was born, who died, all that good stuff. And there is good stuff today. We're heavy on the birthdays today, folks. Tell you right away. Some of them we're just going to run through.
Who cares?
Others are worth commentating on. If you've ever wondered, who's the first English person born in the Americas? Well, that honor
you
goes.
You should wonder. You should know this. This is rudimentary.
Well,
trivia.
I remember learning this in high school. And I forgot it until putting the show together today. I did. Sorry.
Were you in a pool hall?
Maybe.
Misspent youth. Oh, by the way, did you see they defaced that Abraham Lincoln statue in Chicago?
Oh,
so here we go.
Damn.
Yep.
Why?
They put F something on him, you know, in spray paint or whatever, and busted his nose off and everything. I don't know.
Just because
somebody's offended. That's why.
Somebody's offended. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, the honor of the first English child born in the Americas, because I think we can safely say there are other Europeans probably born in the Americas prior to this.
Well, probably sired in the Americas.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Goes to the granddaughter of the governor of the Roanoke Colony, John White. Her name, Virginia Dare, born on this date, 1587. Now, White himself, 3 years to the date that his granddaughter is born, would return from a supply run over to England. And when he returns, Roanoke deserted. That happens same date, August 18th, 1590.
Yep. No guts.
And the mystery
continues
to this day.
We won't unravel it on this show.
Armand, move ahead to 1903. Do you have anything? Do you have any eights?
No,
okay.
I got one.
So Armand has contended, and rightfully so, that the honor of motor glided flight may not really lie with Orville Wilbur Wright.
Right. It was Mr. Whitehead, 1901.
So in 1903, a German engineer who by the name of Carl Jaffo.
And here we got another one.
Supposedly, allegedly, may have, perhaps, did, we don't know, flies his self-made airplane with a motor, so it's motorized, and he gets this plane to work up, actual self-powered, into the air 4 months ahead of Orville and Wilbur at Kitty Hawk.
I don't know. Whitehead's Model 21, I think it was called, is still the champ in my book.
And still, yeah, the Model 20. I looked at a picture of the Model 21.
It doesn't look flight worthy.
It's an interesting looking contraption, though.
Interesting aerodynamics.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like I said, it looks like a moth.
Not to be emulated.
1920.
Well, I got 1914.
Okay.
Well, Germany declares war on Russia.
That's true.
And Woodrow Wilson, now take him at his word.
Okay, what's he doing?
Proclamation of neutrality. We're not going to get in this war.
We're not.
Well, of course, it's not our war. It's their war.
Nope.
I have no business getting in this war. And I think he's going to abide by this.
Do you?
He's an honest man.
I'm going to take the opposite money on
that
one.
Not even a tinge of racism or what's the word I'm looking for? Mendacity. That's the word.
Nice word,
Armand.
Mendacity. M-E-N-D-A-C-I-T-Y. Mendacity. Is that right?
In what play was that famous? I'll give you a hint. Big Daddy?
Big Daddy.
Yeah. Well, That's
no,
pretty big
I'm
hint.
Still drawing. I know that's a big
cat on a hot tin roof.
Damn it.
Remember? Brick was always talking about mendacity. That's why I always had to get drunk.
Right. Yeah, well, now here's one that I know stirs Armand's stomach. The 19th Amendment, August the 18th. Yes, women's suffrage
they can have it.
Is passed. They have the vote. The 19th Amendment is ratified. Now, ratification happens on this date.
Yeah,
not
Tennessee, of all places.
Pushed it through to get it over the top. Huh? Good for Tennessee. Still, I love Tennessee.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I do. I love it.
Open-minded.
I love Tennessee. It's one of my favorite states in the Union.
Okay.
Tennessee?
It might be
my most favorite state.
Most favorite?
Yes.
As opposed to your least favorite? Well, least
my
favorite
least
makes
favorite
sense.
State, I
well,
would
most
have
favorite
to say.
Is a tautology, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It Thank is. You. My least favorite state, I would have to say, is Arkansas.
Okay.
Nope. Check
What's
that.
What's wrong with Arkansas?
Oklahoma. I am not a fan. The whole state smells like hot dog water.
I'm starting to hate California myself.
Yeah. The weather's so good,
they
though. You got to look
yeah,
past
but
it.
They've ruined it. Oh.
1938. A bridge from, and this is a biggie, the bridge that connects the United States to Canada over the St. Lawrence River, the Seaway. It's dedicated by FDR. Armand, look past that. Yeah. But it's the Thousand Islands Bridge. Big project, important bridge. Probably should be a little more famous than
I
it is.
Franklin stood up for that and took his braces off.
I think he did.
Somebody, I got to give him credit for that. The guy had guts. He didn't want anybody to know that he was crippled.
It's amazing.
So he was on his feet.
Do
like,
you know?
He was in agony. So I'll give him that much.
There's a lot of people still alive, obviously, who have met FDR. And a guy that you might be familiar with, your cousin, John is certainly familiar with him, J. Randolph Jr.
Oh.
So the son of the senator from West Virginia. As he was growing up, they grew up in, he lived in D.C. with his, mom and dad. Wherever they lived, as senators did.
Yeah.
And he would go to the White House Easter egg roll as a little kid. And Jennings will tell you, that's his real formal name, Jennings will tell you that he can remember sitting in FDR's lap in the wheelchair, and he could feel the braces, as he was sitting. And he was about 5, probably 6 years old, maybe younger. Yeah. But knowing that something, that's odd.
I'm not, as a person, I don't know what, I have nothing. Like I said, the guy's got guts, but as a politician, I can't stand him. And why this guy is deified, well, I know why he's deified, because the left loves his methods. Giving people money, giving things away.
There's a whole bunch of reasons. I also think any president that is the victor of a world war is going to be deified.
Yeah, right.
Churchill's deified.
Is Woodrow Wilson deified?
I think he is.
He was vilified. I think, almost killed him.
Well, I think he is, though. I mean, look, he's got, the Woodrow Wilson School of Government at Princeton is named for him.
There's a wing of the Ku Klux Klan named after him.
Is it really?
There should be.
Oh, okay. See, you and the fake news.
Well, what was the first movie shown in the White House? His favorite
Birth
movie.
Of a Nation?
Yes, his favorite movie.
Birth of a Nation, right? Yep, there you go.
Okay, he basically single-handedly led to the resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan. Okay. People that we were talking about this, the evil that not dare not speak its name, Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. I
read some of the things he said about black people sometimes.
You don't have to sell me. I'm
saying, why don't we tear his statues down?
Are there a lot of them? Are there a lot of Wilson statues? I don't think so. 1940.
Did you ever see the movie Wilson?
No.
It flopped. It was a big flop.
I can imagine.
What's his name played him?
John Voight.
Alexander Knox. No, it was 1941. Man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 20th Century Knox. Fox made it.
1940. Now, one of the things about World War II that I'm incredibly fascinated with, and I will read anything on it, is the Battle of Britain. And this date, the 18th of August, is regarded and quote unquote the hardest day air battle. It's the largest engagement in the history of aerial combat. Heavy losses for both the Germans,
up to that time,
both for the British. Yeah,
there weren't that many planes involved, really, compared because that British had like 300. They didn't have that many.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the true dogfighting. When you think of the dogfight, now you got it. This is it.
I think of World War One and Spads and Newport.
Well, that's also I do.
The Golden Age.
Yeah, that's
the chivalry. This is
right.
Close.
Right.
But I like, you know, like the Dawn Patrol
mm-hmm.
with Errol
mm-hmm.
Flynn and mm-hmm. Basil Rathbone
mm-hmm.
and David Niven.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a big day. And
this is a huge day.
Pretty much of a, it was kind of, the Germans took more damage. It didn't really end anything. But I think now, since you probably study it more than I do, that the dogma I always heard is that the Germans just had them almost at their mercy because the British couldn't replace their losses. They were hitting the aerodromes and they're hitting the fields. And they're also hitting the radar stations, which would have eventually made the British capitulate because they were just on their last legs. I'm not sure if any of that's true. And then Churchill initiated the bombing of Berlin with like 10 bombers, you know what I mean? And that's when Hitler called him a gangster, et cetera. Now, most people don't know this because the Germans were isolating their attacks to these areas, which strategically is what you should do. And then when Churchill attacked Berlin, like I said, was, I don't know, like 8 bombs, you know, like a Doolittle raid, basically. Hitler got pissed off, started going after Coventry in London and started hitting civilian targets. Is
that's
that
right.
true? Okay.
Well, I tend to think it is.
That's the simplified version.
Yeah. And you may have boiled it down there, but I think, this is me, but I think there's more than a kernel of truth in that, Armand.
Okay.
Three books, if you really...
Yeah, what should you read?
Well, okay, there's a couple. Now, two of these I have, one I do not, and I need to get it. I'm going to start in reverse order. Last of the Few. It's The Battle of Britain by the pilots. So it's a narrative.
Okay.
The Battle of Britain, 5 months that changed history, May to October 1940. That's by James Holland. The one I have not seen, nor do I have, is Hurricane. Victor of the Battle of Britain by Leo McKinstry. Well, that's talking about the hurricane.
Oh, the Hawker. Okay.
Yes.
Hawker Hurricane.
Yes. You know. So there's just a couple for you. There, Duel of Eagles is another one that's been on my shelf for years. I mean, they go on and on. This topic has been written on extensively.
Collecting dust, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I can't get to them all.
To read one.
I'm halfway through my self-assembled library.
All right, so I guess we're halfway through. Let's get to the
birthdays. Yeah. Well, let's have some birthdays. We mentioned Virginia Dare, first English child born in the Americas. 1774. Happy birthday, Meriwether Lewis.
You know me. I'm not a big fan of Lewis and Clark.
Now, which one died under mysterious circumstances, Lewis or Clark?
Probably Lewis. It looks like he died pretty young here.
Yeah, that's right. He died in, I think, Western Kentucky.
Yeah,
a little mysterious.
Okay.
Might be a surreal talk episode. 1830, Franz Josef the First.
Yeah, nothing mysterious about this guy.
No.
He died of old age.
Yes, he did.
But
he
now
lived.
His nephew, Franz Ferdinand, didn't quite fare so well.
He took a car ride, escaped one. Got back in the car, didn't escape the second car ride.
This guy's number 3 on the list after Louis XIV and Johann of Liechtenstein.
Yes.
On longevity for rules. I mean, like 60-something years.
Wow.
Yeah, he's up there. He's number 3.
1893, happy birthday, Burley Grimes. Great baseball pitcher of the early age of
last
baseball.
Last spitballer, I believe, right?
Oh, no kidding.
I think he's the last guy to throw a spitball.
Okay, hold on. Now
that's why you put him in there.
I've just always known him from being a baseball geek.
Yeah, I think he's like Cavendish in the NHL. They grandfathered him in.
So, under the grandfather rule, yes, Grimes is the last pitcher officially permitted
Yeah.
To throw the spitter.
I mean, like McTavish and the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
This guy could throw a spitball.
Yeah, now you're referencing hockey there. So yeah. Burley Grimes pitched in the dead ball and the live ball era.
The wet ball era, apparently. Yeah, well, the slimy ball era.
So what's funny is, unofficially, the spitball era doesn't really come to an end until 1934 when he retires.
Right, yeah.
But he would pitch for the Dodgers, the Pirates.
Cardinals, too, I think.
The St. Louis Cardinals, the Chicago
Cubs.
But he pitched
in the World Series, even though he was on that team in 34.
Yeah, I'm going to look and see if there's a postseason on him. Postseason pitching, yeah, he did. 1930.
Oh, in 31, I think he was on the Cardinals, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was 2-0.
Yeah.
In the 31 World Series, 0-2 in the 30 World Series, and this is really interesting. He pitched in three consecutive World Series.
Well, let's see. He would have been, what did he win, with the Cubs?
Yeah, Cubs in 32.
Yeah.
So he's there the day that Ruth either calls the shot or doesn't call the shot, whatever.
Charlie Root
was
the pitcher.
Good pitcher for the Cubs. Yeah, so Grimes had a great career, and
what started all that? Mark Koenig had been traded to the Cubs. And he was having some kind of contract dispute or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess at that time, when the visiting team came to Wrigley, they had to go through the home dugout to get to their dugout.
So apparently
he's going down and he says, "Hey, Mark, what's the matter? These cheapskates won't give you the money," or something like that, and pissed everybody off. And that's why they're booing the hell out of him.
Grimes, right on the edge of even bigger greatness, 270 wins, 212 losses.
Yeah, he's a pretty good record. Yeah.
So that's a 560 winning percentage is terrific. Multiple times he won 20 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
He's not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. Deservingly so. Yeah, happy birthday, Burley. Good stuff. Last spitballer.
He's got to have a little dribble on his bust.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Yeah, just, a little spit.
What is that? That's a bronze spit. Oh, okay, it's bronze spit. Yeah. Okay. 1904, Max Factor, the American businessman,
makeup man.
Now we do the show out of near St. Louis. St. Louis always claims Max Factor. I looked that up. Yeah, he moved away at the age of 4.
Well, we got another St. Louisan coming up too.
Yeah, we do. 1917. I like this guy. Happy birthday, Casper Weinberger.
Not him.
Wow. Yeah, not a St. Louisan.
I would think you would like this guy.
No, I did. I always like. Look, he's your Secretary of Defense.
Well, he's the SDI guy. They thought everybody thought he was nuts. Remember?
Yeah.
He was a big proponent of SDI, you know?
Yeah.
He was also Office of Management of Budget for Nixon and Ford.
Yeah.
So
I don't think the
Bean counter, too.
I don't think the SDI was necessarily nuts.
No, I think it's a great idea. I think it was probably workable. Well, one or two missiles.
Even if it's not workable.
Yeah, well.
Just the thought.
Well, the idea is you make the Russians do it too.
And right, and they're spending and they're spending. Right, and they're, right. And that's kind of why I dug them.
We're playing chess, man. They're playing. What are they playing over there? The Russians. Russian roulette?
Well, if they do, they keep reducing their numbers by 1/6 if they're using a revolver.
That's okay.
Yeah. 1920, Shelley Winters.
Shelley Shrift. Now, I actually talked to her on the telephone once.
Oh, well, good for you. Yeah. She was a real good-looking lady.
At the beginning, she was,
And then she kind of bloomed up.
Yeah. But so she was kind of a caricature of herself.
Of herself,
at the end.
Yeah.
But she was, she's a nice lady. In fact, the guy I wrote the screenplay about, they had already made a movie about him, King of the Gypsies. And the gypsy, I was doing a story about him after the movie came out. It was with Eric Roberts. Shelley Winters played
Julia's
his mother.
Brother? That Eric Roberts?
Yeah, he was King of the Gypsies. Like his first big role.
Okay.
It's like in 79.
Wow.
And my buddy the gypsy,
this
was based on, very loosely, by the way, said he was a jerk. Brooke Shields was his sister. She wouldn't deign to talk to him, of course.
Wow.
Judd Hirsch actually wasn't a good guy, he said. Sterling Hayden was the father. He was okay, but Shelley Winters was really nice to him. He said she was, and they remained friends. So I went to do one of my interviews with him. Our upcoming opus. So I went to interview him.
Yeah, again, full disclosure, this is not BS. Armand is a screenwriter, and we kind of just got Armand's next assignment this morning, and fascinating, good luck with it, Armand. I'm very happy for you.
Well, speaking of that, that's kind of along these lines.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, "Hey, I come in." He's on the phone, and I said, "I don't want to disturb you." No, I want you to talk to this person. I go, "Well, I don't know who the hell it is."
And well, Shelley.
That's
awesome.
I'm from St. Louis too.
Nice
lady.
Let me just get. I just for my own curiosity want to see this where.
Now I liked her in Place in the Sun. Now she won 2 Academy Awards.
I did too, Armand.
She's a real bitch in Patch of Blue, which won her Academy Award. And what was the other one she won the Academy? Anne Frank, Diary of Anne Frank.
Yeah.
So anyway, she apparently she. wanted to get a part or whatever, and some hot shoe young director or whatever said, well, we want a screen test.
Here it is again. Okay.
What?
Yeah, she's from St. Louis, but her mom, let's see.
Well, she was Jewish, so we had to kick her out of town.
Well, yeah, they moved to Brooklyn when she was 9.
Yeah. Brooklyn, Illinois?
No. Oh. The real Brooklyn. Oh, the fourth largest city in America at that point.
I don't know. I think Brooklyn, Illinois has got more strip joints, though.
And her mother was a singer at the Municipal Opera of St. Louis, which is referred to as the Muni, which is a beautiful outdoor amphitheater in St. Louis's Forest Park. It's kind of a shame Central Park doesn't have that type of arrangement that St. Louis's Forest Park does. It doesn't. So it's kind of a miss on Central Park, I think, there.
Well, anyway, to finish this story, apparently this director insisted that she do a screen test for her, you know, part.
Yeah.
And she said, I'll come back tomorrow for the screen. She comes back with a purse, dumps her purse out, 2 Academy Awards on his desk. F you, buddy.
That a girl?
I don't do screen tests.
That a girl?
Right.
And she made the trip back just for spite, which I can respect.
Yeah, she's a tough gal, man.
All right. Happy birthday, Shelley. She died in 2006. I think I would have liked to know her.
Yeah.
I
don't think you would have liked to know this lady.
I tried to book her as a guest a bunch, and God bless the Cincinnati Reds PR department for being kind and telling me not to just go screw myself.
Here again, I mean, you know, let's – okay.
But let me say the name. Marge Schott's birthday, 1928.
Which you can hardly even say it, but is she a racist or just ignorant?
Ignorant.
Okay, right. You know, because the slur she was making is about the black people's intelligence or something.
And Hitler had a lot of good ideas.
Well, that's getting a little, That may be getting a little to the fringe. But if somebody, you know, somebody comes up to you and say, listen, like, you know, Archie Bunker, you watch him, he's, you know, it's a well-known fact that your black people are faster and stronger and they don't bruise as easy, you know, and all that. I mean, it's funny, right? You laugh at it because it's
when it's a TV show, because he's ignorant. Yeah. When you're the owner of a baseball team employing African Americans,
well, who was the guy that said they don't have the brains to be in the front office?
That was Al Campanis.
Al Campanis.
No, Al Davis would never say anything like that. I mean, there's very few.
What did Jimmy the Greek say? He said something too that got him blackballed.
Oh yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
He said something about black people.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, the Greek. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I don't think that's hatred.
You know. No, I don't think she had much love for them.
No.
Any minority.
Sounds like she's against the Jews more.
I think she's
blacks.
Against everybody. Yeah. She's against everybody that wasn't white German. As
that to me is ignorance or your upbringing.
As I like to say, the Route 50 belt of America, which is pretty much white German all the way. All right. Just keep going west. It's always white German.
Well, what's the buckle on the Bible belt? That's the town that had the Scopes trial.
Yes, the Tennessee
Dayton,
town.
Dayton, Tennessee.
Oh, the buckle on the Bible belt. What a great term.
Well, H.L. Mencken, yeah.
So Marge Schott, owner of the Reds. Her family was big in car dealerships. That's how they her husband, rather, made the money.
Well, Elway did it the other way around, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a famous athlete. Now you can't go anywhere in Denver without seeing an Elway car dealership.
See, now, if you're gonna cast opprobrium on someone.
Oh, the next guy.
Guy's the one you
have at it, baby. Have at it.
This guy's a rapist.
1933, Roman Polanski.
I don't care how much talent this guy's
and
got.
And I don't care whether the girl was consensual or not.
She's 13.
Fucking 13 years old, you bastard.
Well, there you go. Yeah, the people that dismiss this crap. But yeah, if it was your daughter, I don't know, in Hollywood.
No.
I don't know if people would really care.
It's undismissable.
Most people.
It's now.
I think there's a new one just came out.
Having said that.
I like Chinatown.
Chinatown is the clubhouse leader for you?
Yeah.
On Polanski films?
Oh, yeah,
by far. Okay.
I can't think of
what's the other option?
Rosemary's Baby.
Is Last Picture Show his? No, that's
Bogdanovich.
That's Peter Bogdanovich, yeah.
Well, I guess Pianist is the one he won the Academy Award for.
It's a good film.
It was a good script. I don't think the direction. Well, I don't know, director. Auteur. Anyway, I don't like this guy. I'm not going to give him an excuse because his wife was murdered. You know, I was in the dumps. I was depressed. Yeah, give me a break. So I went dropped a roofie on a 13-year-old.
But hold on. I don't know if he dropped a roofie on her.
He drugged her.
He drugged her. Oh, Jesus. It's even worse. God. Mm-hmm. This is hard to say, but you are correct. There should be no free pass because Sharon Tate got murdered by the Manson family.
Yeah, right. I mean, we all get depressed. We've all had tragedy in our lives. We don't.
Now, granted, his tragedy was on the most public scale possible.
I agree.
But yeah, you can't. There is no past. Speaking of Polanski,
and it's
Sharon,
not the only time. There are others.
No,
that
I know.
Have come out.
I know.
Yeah, so it's not an isolated incident.
No, he's a sexual predator. Let's, you know.
Yeah, what's his name? Chris Hansen ought to talk to him.
Oh yeah! Oh,
oh, I love those.
Can you imagine Polanski today?
That'd be a great script, wouldn't it?
Roman Polanski gets caught by Chris Hansen.
Yeah, yeah, but
he goes by the screen name.
Yeah, right.
Chinatown 222.
69 Polish prick. Whatever. Yeah.
Best screen name ever on
Kitty Cat
on To Catch a Predator.
Oh God!
Meet Rocket 88.
Oh, that's right. I know
that. Unbelievable. Now, speaking of Manson, Polanski and Sharon Tate, 1934, August 18th, Vincent Bugliosi is born.
Isn't it eerie? Yeah.
That's
weird. I read his book, Helter Skelter.
Yeah,
it's worth reading.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about Vincent on recent shows because of the time frame with the Tate LaBianca murders. 1934, born on the same date as Vincent, one of the greats. I've heard him defined as grace under pressure. I think that's the term.
I thought that was, isn't that Hemingway's definition of courage?
Yeah.
So this had put.
Yeah.
Yeah. What they call Clemente?
That's... Yeah, Roberto Clemente, who, and rightfully so. Who knows what he could have ended up with? He ended up with exactly 3,000 hits
on the dot.
Because he finished the 71 season. The Pirates had won the 71 World Series. New Year's Day, 1972, he's flying an aid mission to Nicaragua where there had been an earthquake, and the plane crashes
and he's
killed. So happy birthday, Roberto. When you talk to ballplayers of that era, the just amazing.
Something was passion and grace.
That's it. I think that's it.
That's what came up on Google here. All right. Well, yeah, I got a good player.
Yeah.
And a good team. Man.
Rocket
that
arm.
That Pirate team was
tremendous
tough.
Bat.
Is it Rennie Stennett on that team?
Manny Sanguian. Willie Stargell. Now, he played so long for the Pirates that there's a couple era of Pirate
Bill
team.
Blass.
No, Steve Blass.
Steve Blass.
Who
Blass is the designer.
Bill Blass designed. But Steve Blass, great pitcher, who also suffered what Rick Ankiel would go through, where he just lost control.
Oh.
But it still is a broadcaster with the Pirates and a great man. So, yeah, anything you would – I believe every – and look, baseball has a Roberto Clemente Award that they give out annually, which I think, honest to God, Armand, I think it's the best award you can win in baseball.
Okay.
I know the MVP is the most valuable player and everything. The Roberto Clemente Award, though, is basically saying this is the most valuable person
game. Like the Lady Bing trophy, huh?
The Lady Bing accelerated.
Except
even.
You're good.
You know, the Lady Bing, meaning you're doing works outside of baseball for the betterment of humanity, which you may not like, but... But
leave humanity alone. We'll do without you. Just hit 300.
Just hit that fastball, will you, kid?
Earn your
All right. 19
for duty and humanity. Where's that from? Men in White. I just watched it the other night. It's Three Stooges.
1936. Robert Redford born. Lots of classic lines. This is my favorite.
When I walk down the street, people look at me and say, "There goes Roy Hobbs, the best there ever was." When I walk down the street, people look at me and say, "There goes Roy Hobbs."
I got to hear it again.
The best there ever was.
Hey, I liked him in The Sting.
I tried to watch The Sting the other
night. Johnny Hooker.
And I fell asleep. Wow. I don't know if I'm getting old or it's not a reflection of the movie. Obviously, Butch and Sundance is.
Yeah, I like Sting better. You know, all their lives, they're trying to get another script to do together. They never did quite get one that was.
I don't know that they needed to. Honest to God,
probably not. But they didn't want to.
Honest to God, it's like I know people love Heat because you finally got Pacino and De Niro together.
All right.
But that's my feeling about it too.
Yeah,
it doesn't suck, but it ain't great.
No, it's no Godfather 2.
Look, they captured they captured that genie in a bottle.
They only really had one scene together in that movie, right?
Oh, yeah, they're not
even together anyway.
Yeah, it's not like Newman Redford.
That was kind of a real coincidence, right? Didn't he pick him up on a car, give him a ticket or something or whatever?
Kind of contrived.
Almost like they wrote the script and, hey, there are no scenes with these two guys together.
But it's not like the magic of Newman and Redford. and Butch and Sundance. Who are those guys?
Yeah, well, that's a good script.
And again, I love my favorite line of that movie. Doesn't even belong to either Redfern or Newman. It's help me out here. They're coming down the mountain.
Yeah.
Nobody. Nobody.
Oh yeah, yeah. We don't have the money yet.
Morons.
Strother Martin.
I've got morons on my team.
What we have here.
Now you're mixing up Newman movies. Yeah, come on, it's Redford's birthday.
That line is.
Yeah. He did get the Sundance Film Festival going, though, which you ever been to Sundance?
No.
No? I'd like to do it, but I have a feeling it's a lot of artsy-fartsy Hollywood rather than
too much.
Maybe it was intended to be. 1943, happy birthday, Martin Mull. I kind of always made me laugh.
He's all right.
1952, this guy was gone way too early. But Armand, here's the line he's known for. Here he comes. He's walking into the dining hall, up in the Catskills. He's approaching Orbach.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Yeah, that's
nobody puts baby in a corner.
Yeah,
Patrick Swayze.
I like that. It's on YouTube where he's on Saturday Night Live and he's doing that stripper act.
When he does that act against Chris Farley,
yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's one of the great SNL moments.
Funny.
God, is that good? All right, another funny guy. 1957, Dennis Leary. I think you would appreciate him.
He's all right.
My name of the day goes to Fat Lever, born in 1960.
Okay.
Yeah, American ball player, sportscast. You don't know him, do you?
No.
Ed Norton, born in 1969. I've heard that Norton, as good an actor as I think this guy is absolutely a just disaster on the set to be around.
Oh, really? Yeah. I had to talk to Valerie because, you know, she's the one that she's the casting director.
See if there's any truth to that.
She
would
was
you?
The casting director for American X or whatever the hell it was.
American History X.
American History X. Yeah, she cast him. I'm sure she knows him real
because
well.
Everything he's done, honest to God, I think he's a great actor.
He's okay, yeah.
But the fact that he is not in more things is kind of telling.
Well, I asked Valerie who's the biggest jerk you ever worked with, and she said it was Jared Leto. So we're going to drop names, so he didn't come up. Said Val Kilmer was no picnic either.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'll ask her about this guy.
1970, Malcolm Jamal Warner, one of the Cosby kids. Mm-hmm. And 1978, Andy Samberg, who I enjoyed on SNL. He did a lot of the SNL digital clips, sort of bringing the show forward. Although it's Saturday Night Live.
It's in decline.
No, it's not. No,
come
sir.
On.
Oh, no.
We'll never get back to the 70s, man, when it was funny.
Okay.
That's right.
I think they're best when they're totally satirical, and there's been moments in the past 10 years that are I would put up against anything from 75, 76, 77.
I'm talking about whole shows.
Not every whole show in 75 was funny. I'm sorry. It's not.
Most skits were pretty
good. No, the skits. Look, Belushi included skits were. Yeah.
The floor cleaner that's. What was that? A topping? Is that a topping?
That's Belushi could make anything work.
That was Dan Aykroyd.
And Aykroyd could make anything
work. Bass-o-matic?
Tremendous.
That's good bass.
That's good bass.
Stuff like that's fun.
All right. Back to the events. Now, here's a sexy one. Oh, wow. 1958.
Yeah,
well, I always get this confused because the movie comes out in 62, but the book comes out. This
That's
had to be
Shelley Winters, by the way,
this
was in the movie.
Had to be salacious.
The cow. Remember when she found that out?
But Vladimir Nabokov's book, the controversial novel, Lolita, published in the United States.
It should have been directed by Roman Polanski.
August 18th, 1958. The film directed by?
The film was directed by Kubrick, our friend.
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick.
Well, who played Lolita? She's still alive, by the way.
I know. I can see her face. I'm drawn to
Sue Lyon.
Sue Lyon, okay.
And what's her real name? What's Lolita's real name? I've given you this question before.
Well, they call her Lola, but...
Well, Lolita, but it's... Dolores Hayes.
Dolores Hayes. Yeah, Lolita's a better name.
Yeah, well, Sue Lyon was looking pretty good.
Yeah. All right. 63, the first African-American to graduate from the University of Mississippi. Honor goes to James Meredith.
I think they're trying to. Didn't he need the National Guard?
Yes, they did. And there's a great documentary where, you know, Robert Kennedy's working that down there and he has to call his brother to sign the order to call out the National Guard and force this one through. And they did. And the University of Mississippi is an interesting campus because they kind of have two quads. And, you know, prior to a football game, they have this incredible setup they call the Grove. and it is just a sea of people.
Don't
and
two quads make an octa?
Well, they're not. They're separated just ever so slightly, I would say. But you can, you know, you can go right to the steps where it all happened, and you know, on any football game Saturday, and someone will be having a huge barbecue under a tent, and they, Armand, these people put out these incredible tents that have flat screen TVs in them.
Well, yeah,
fully catered. Some ladies hang chandeliers in the tents.
Well, listen, somebody's going to get offended and take a jackhammer to these steps. You watch.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
1965, Operation Starlight by the United States Marines.
This is the beginning of a spiral into oblivion here.
Well, they go, this is the first major ground battle of the Vietnam War, the 18th of August, 1965. The Marines wipe out the Viet Cong stronghold of Von Tuong. T-U-O-N-G, the Von Tuong Peninsula, and the war in full effect is off and running.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to end well.
No, no.
Well, I guess it will. They're capitalists now anyway. I guess we won the war, technically.
No, capitalism is in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, so it's not... We win.
You have, you know, a bunch of people who have just been back from Vietnam, and they've said...
More capitalists than St. Louis.
You can't imagine what Ho Chi Minh City, the former Saigon,
that's
looks
what I
like.
Hear.
1977, Stephen Biko.
Is it Biko?
Biko?
I don't know how you pronounce it. Yeah.
Well, he's arrested at that roadblock under the Terrorism Act of South Africa.
Yeah, this guy is like a symbol of apartheid.
He would later die from injuries sustained during that arrest. But
made a movie about it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the movie's simply called...
Isn't it Stephen Biko?
Is Biko. Yeah, B-I-K-O.
How do you pronounce it? Oh, Cry Freedom.
Cry Freedom's another one.
I was going to watch that the other
night. Cry Freedom's a good one. I want to say Cry Freedom might have been
that's
a role.
That's Denzel Washington.
Yeah, it might have been.
I thought Sidney Poitier played him.
Not in Cry Freedom. I don't
87.
Think. Was that a Roland Joffe film?
That couldn't have been, because this is, this happened in 77, but what am I thinking about a movie with?
Now, this happens in 77, and this is the event that really brings South Africa's apartheid policy onto the world stage.
This galvanized people.
Yes, it did. Now, final event for me today. Do you remember the assassination of the presidential hopeful in Colombia?
No, I don't remember.
Luis Carlos Galán.
No. The name sounds familiar. The drugs? I guess the drug cartel
and
got him.
There you have it.
That's easy. That's easy to figure
out. Who do you think was behind that?
Oh, what's his name? The guy with the guy that spent $10,000 a month on rubber bands for first cash. Who was it? What was his name?
Yeah, so now Galán, who's... Look, he's a hero in Colombia.
Yeah,
well,
how heroes usually wind up.
Yeah. Now he was a journalist prior to that. You can actually see his assassination. This is one of the.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is like Sadat's, where the cameras are rolling when it happens.
Okay, so are the heads.
Yeah.
All right. I got 1992. The BTK killer. Remember him? Bind and torment. Was it?
No, he
bind, torture, and kill, right?
He was in Oklahoma, right?
Wichita, Kansas.
Kansas, okay.
Yeah. Dennis Rader. Good name for although he should have three names, technically, right? Don't serial killers always have three names?
Well, they get your middle name out there.
Well, this guy's Dennis Rader. I guess he's still around, isn't he? He got sentenced to like 10 life sentences.
Yeah, let me go back to Galán for a second. Planned by Escobar, according to two of Escobar's former hitmen at the Escobar farm.
Oh, yeah.
And
they were milking cows and doing these. Oh, this guy, man. Dennis Lynn Rader. Okay, he's got three names.
Yeah. So Armand, what's your
qualifies.
Middle name? What's your middle name?
Aslan.
Oh.
It means lion.
A-OK.
Hear me roar.
The A-OK killer was on the loose. Aslan with an A?
Yeah,
okay.
You don't have any O's in Armenian.
No, you don't? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's still alive. He's 72.
Right, the BTK killer. All right. That does it for the events for me today. I want to talk about a little at length, though, Armand, is this. I find this fascinating. My first death of the day.
Well, it's a pretty fascinating guy.
Goes to Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
August the 18th, 1227.
Well, you got an audio for this?
No.
I was going to say, look on your computer.
I think the microphones were not available or they weren't working that day.
Apple computers back then.
It is estimated through DNA.
How many people he killed?
Y chromosome technologies.
Oh.
1 in 200 men on this planet are directly related.
This guy's like mitochondrial
to Adam. Genghis Khan.
Well, yeah, I guess because he banged somebody.
That many wives, that many rapes.
Fucked. Yeah, that's what he did.
Well, wives, other affairs, and rapes.
That couldn't have been more much fun either because, you know, he and his men were almost had a religious antipathy toward bathing. Yeah, I mean, apparently you could smell these guys coming like miles before they got there. Did you know that? Not that it helped, but they couldn't sneak up on anybody. These guys were like covered with lice and stuff. I mean, they were like caked in garbage.
So this is interesting, Armand, because you know we love science. Genghis Khan would be an example of what they call super Y, meaning the Y chromosome, which gets passed father to son, son to son.
Yeah.
So, you know, your Y chromosome history it's there. So even though geneticists will tell you only about 10%, only about 90% of the fathers in any household are actually the genetic parent of the child. But you can link it up. If you have.
That's a sad fact.
If you have. I don't know that it's a fact, though. It's a.
Yeah, I don't know. It's 10%. Jeez. You sluts.
No.
All right. Well, anyway, this guy was, he was scourge of the.
So there's a couple other these Y chromosome things in the Manchu lineage, the UI Neil lineage, where these men have been so successful in procreating that as the generations then span out, so many people are direct descendants of them. I mean, think about that. 1 in 200.
Jeez. I hope that doesn't mean we're related in any way. Genetically, not by temperament, I'll tell you that. Or
I'm thinking of
politics.
How we could be related.
I don't think
it would be through a grandfather of mine who was Balkan. That would be the closest I think I could get off the top of my head.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, I think I'd rather be
rest assured, Armand.
I think I'm related to.
We're no worse than 15th cousins. Okay.
I'd rather be related to Honoré de Balzac.
Died this date in 1850. The novelist, the playwright, the great French one.
I've read some of his short, like novelettes or novelettes, I guess. Cousin Bet. They made a movie out of that actually. Not bad. Not a bad writer for a Frenchman.
Yep, not a bad. No, I
would advise having Seagram's if you're gonna.
Well,
it helps.
I did. We read some of the Balzac in my French classes in college.
In French?
No, I had to, I could not.
Pretty good vocabulary.
My daughter can do this, but I can't. Yeah, 1919, the death of a legend, Joe Seagram.
Yes.
Where would we have been without Seagram to supply all that Canadian booze during Prohibition? Yeah. God bless him.
That reminds me of that W.C. Fields skit where he's playing golf. Remember, he goes, "Give me that club we got from Canada." The guy pulls out a bottle of Canadian Club. Not that threat.
That's fantastic.
Canadian
that club we got from Canada.
Yeah, his caddy pulls out a bottle.
I mean, but really, Seagram's is one of the biggest companies in the beverage industry.
Stock,
I mean, yes.
Well, I think they're owned. Is it Constellation owns them? I don't think they were bought out by somebody.
Oh, there's a
Constellation, I think.
There's also an Irish one. Is it Diageo? Owns a whole bunch of.
Yeah, that company. Yeah.
Right. Owns a whole bunch of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, right. You can't go wrong buying booze.
1940, Walter Chrysler, the death of Walter Chrysler, who started out with Ford.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much. I just watched this huge thing on the history of the cars that made America, which is really a telling about Ford, Durant with GM, Chevrolet, Chrysler, and especially the Dodge brothers. But that the Dodge brothers and they all come out of the same batch. It's really quite fascinating. I mean,
Vivendi owns them. Huh?
It's amazing. Oh, Vivendi. Okay.
Well, yeah. Remember, remember a day at the races when Groucho was being introduced to the rest of his staff, the doctors. Mayo Brothers, 28. Dodge Brothers, late 29. Remember that?
Late 29.
He got a car for that. The Dodge Brothers liked that so much that they, they gave him a car.
Oh man.
Which is, I don't know how many cars they sold because of that, but it was a pretty funny joke.
That's good. 1990, the death of B.F. Skinner.
Oh, this guy.
Wow.
Put his kids in Skinner boxes.
Wow, yeah. Well, the inventor of the Skinner box.
You know, this guy invented a missile that had a pigeon operating it?
Yes.
Well, you knew that, huh?
Yes. B.F. Skinner's fascinating. He's a fascinating fellow.
He's quite a guy. I'd like to read his book sometime. I guess I wouldn't. It's Walden 2, I think. It's the same old bullshit Thoreau was saying, except updated for 20th century boredom. Yes. God. B.F. Skinner.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, he puts his kids in Skinner box. I don't know how they turned out. Yeah, you peck at this, if you hit the right button, you get food. If you hit the wrong button, you get a shock.
Well, now, here's where I really hope Skinner's wrong, because he considers free will an illusion.
That's correct, yeah.
And a human action dependent on consequences of previous actions.
I think he's got something there.
Yeah. I hope not. I hope we do have free will.
Now, you did miss in 2014. Oh, we'll go to Don Pardo. Yeah,
Don Pardo.
Thank you, Don Pardo.
Passed away in 2014.
Yeah, good voiceover guy. And
tremendous voiceover guy.
But you missed the big guy of the day, to me, 2004, next to Genghis Khan, Elmer Bernstein.
I didn't even see it. I totally missed it.
Man.
All right, hold on. Give me your favorite Bernstein.
Magnificent Seven, probably. Well, To Kill a Mockingbird's pretty damn good, too. Oh, he's got too many to name. Sons of Katie Elder. This guy's got – he's probably my favorite, I guess. Ten Commandments, another great one. But he only won one Academy Award. You know what it was for, of all things? Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the only one competitive Academy Award he won. But he's great. He's one of the top five. Bernstein, Steiner, Korngold. I got to put John Williams in there. Who's the other one? I'm sure. Oh, Alfred Newman. Yeah, we all know this. The Marlboro commercial. I think there's only a few guys that have on the list of like the 100 greatest.
Beautiful, isn't it?
The 100 greatest theme. John Williams got three, I think. He's got two. A couple other guys have two. This one and To Kill a Mockingbird on there. But
that is so good.
Yeah, he did all the Western, Big Jake, that's another good one. John Wayne Western's probably got him doing the soundtrack.
He's conducting this
score,
one, too, by the way.
Sure, yeah. So.
No, I mean the video we're watching here, Elmer's conducting.
You can see him with the
baton. Oh, yeah, yeah, he's in
that
full.
That was a tragic summer. I was living in L.A. He, Raxon, and Goldsmith all died within like 2 months. It's like, what the hell's going on with these guys? They all died in 2004, the summer of 2004. What a foul summer that was. Yeah. So anyway. Yeah. Okay, there you go. Oh, yes. To Kill a Mockingbird. I like the Boo Radley theme where, Robert Duvall comes out.
Well, you're right. I think Mockingbird gets overlooked as far as the theme goes, Armon.
Well,
yeah.
I told you it's in the top 100 or
that's
whatever.
Great.
It's been recognized.
Let me give you booze.
One of the great.
Let me give you booze here.
Booze theme.
Ah, stupid commercial.
Of course.
Mute
hey, Boo.
You. Yeah. Now, is that really his first appearance on the screen?
Well, yeah, he didn't have any words, obviously. He didn't have any dialogue.
All right, come on.
Scout, you think you could tell us what happened?
I don't know.
She's still alive.
All of a sudden, somebody grabbed me.
Always called Gregory Peck Atticus every time she saw him afterwards.
Couldn't get
Then Mr. Yule, I reckon, grabbed him again. And Jim hollered. Then somebody grabbed me.
His theme better start here.
Yeah.
Mr. Yule, I guess.
There it is.
Okay, here we go.
Haunting theme. Even then, he was kind of bald.
He's receding hairline.
Yeah, he's losing it right there. That's like 62.
Yeah, Armon, how that sweeps in right there.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's beautiful.
Hey, Boo.
Hey, Boo.
It's Jean Louise. Mr. Arthur Radley.
I think he did, didn't he do the Sand Pebbles, too? That's a great theme,
too.
Let
me see.
The love theme?
We ran through a bunch of things quick today.
The love theme from the Sand Pebbles. That's a really nice piece of music.
It's amazing.
He's a great man. He's a great composer. And, of course, the Ten Commandments, like I said. When you've done DeMille, that's it. You've hit the big time.
Well, here's Lawrence Welk, the Sam Pebbles thing. That's just them doing
that's nice. That's
I think looking for confirmation, though, that...
No, that's Goldsmith. Forget it. That was Jerry Goldsmith.
Okay, yeah.
He's damn good, too.
I just saw it. Yeah, Bernstein. Man, go listen to some Bernstein, folks.
They're all great.
I mean...
Can't go wrong.
Modern classical music in the movies. Man, what a... The combinations, when these guys get it right, oh, so good.
I can't even go to the gym. We got to listen to this garbage on it. They play that stuff.
Yeah, it's supposed to get you up.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Yeah, put your headphones on and get the Mac 7 going. Good pace for a guy your age.
You know, I had a guy, in all the years I've been working out, I think I haven't had any really incidents in a gym except for 2 days ago.
Oh, you had an incident?
Yeah, I was deadlifting.
August 16th, Armand had an incident. You're deadlifting?
I was deadlifting.
Why?
Because the best exercise you can do. Believe me, it works every muscle. So anyway, this guy comes. I've been doing this 5 years in this gym.
I hope you don't drop the bar on your chest.
Some guy comes. No, that's bench pressing. Deadlift is off the ground.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. You're going to throw your back
only
out.
You could drop it on your chest deadlifting. So anyway, or you and Joe Besser. But this guy comes up to me and goes, hey, you know, that's really disturbing me. I thought he was kidding. I swear to God. Some guy maybe about my age, squat little guy, you know. And I looked and I go, huh? I thought he was kidding. I was going to laugh. He goes, you should be doing that on the pads or whatever. On the other. I looked at him, go to hell.
Yeah, go to hell.
That's all. Go to hell. You do your workout, I'll do mine. And I was like, you got something to say? He backed off.
Put him in a figure four.
What a prick.
Yeah.
Looking at these other guys, even they couldn't believe it. I don't know. Who is this guy? Yeah. Been going to this gym for 5 years.
The balls of that guy.
The cheek, the temerity.
That reminds me, I owe that guy $10.
Who?
Well, the guy I sent him in to do it.
Oh, yeah, you're lucky you came a knuckle sandwich.
Actually, I think the event that affects the world we live in today actually wouldn't be the death of Khan, but just the fact that
Khan's, the existence of Khan.
Khan's procreation, we all feel to this day. Now, Armand, granted, you'll probably never have to worry about this.
What are you talking about?
Well, that one in 200 people someday out in the future will be direct descendants of you.
No, but I definitely think I got some Khan in me.
Do you?
Yeah.
Now, I proposed this to your cousin, and I was vociferously shouted down.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
What, rebutted?
Yes. That Armenians have no Mongol in them.
I don't know. I'm pretty Mongoloid.
Say we aren't Mongrels. Shut up, Flintstone.
Yeah.
That's what I got. I said, I'm just asking.
Hey, wasn't that the Animal House? Were they the Mongols? Because I remember that float. Wasn't it the Mongols?
No, it said, eat me.
No, not that. But I'm talking about the float in the actual parade.
Oh.
What was it? It was Faber College, right?
It's Faber
Weren't
College.
They the Mongols?
The streets of Faber are now yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The DePasto voters.
Ken? Doug Kenny?
Yeah.
When he takes over for that marching band leader.
Oh, Stork?
The Stork.
Yeah.
And he's got the staff, and then he just turns and heads them down the alley.
Yeah.
I don't know why I laugh out loud every time.
God, I like Kevin Bacon. Be calm.
Be calm. That's
gotta
so
be.
Good. The Mongols.
Well, I remember that float.
The
Faber
Mongols. Now, I'm
on here. Bernstein did that.
I
want to
know, though, Armand, because I'm very good at like insane movie trivia.
Yeah.
Like, what is Fawn Leibowitz's roommate's name?
Oh, you asked me that already, Dan. Mm-hmm. I forgot.
What's the name of the receptionist that Otter approaches to ask for Fawn to come downstairs?
Yeah, I remember all that
right.
Stuff.
I know all of that. So I need to know this nickname.
Well, we got to look at it. We'll have it next week, I guess, because this is taking forever.
Yeah, all right.
But I remember distinctly that float had the Mongols on. Now, I assume that was their mascot, right?
Yeah, yeah. But not the Eat Me float.
No.
That was
the Deathmobile.
The Deathmobile. I always wanted a birthday cake that said Eat Me, and I was just too afraid to ask. Yeah, Although there was a TV broadcaster once. Rich Gould is his name.
Oh, I remember him.
He did a thing where they were learning how to make cakes and decorate them and everything. You know, one of those things they send anchors to do that's really stupid to kill time.
Right.
And so he decorated his cake, and at the end, all he does is hold up the cake to the camera, and it says, eat me.
Oh, well,
that's one of the best TV bits I ever saw.
I'm surprised he got away with that one.
I don't think he did. I think he got called to the principal's office.
Yeah.
But it had already aired.
Faber College Mongols.
Ah, I love it. That's awesome. Faber College Mongols.
That's a good That was actually kind of fun. I didn't really like Revenge of the Nerds, but remember they were the Adams.
The Adams.
That's pretty funny.
That's good.
Okay, yeah. That'll give them credit.
All right,
for.
August 18th is in the books. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and thank you again for all the continued support. We love it. If you'd like to send Armand your appreciation, he likes to hear it. He needs a lot of pats on the back. He likes to hear it from the audience. When he does, he feels very good about himself. His ego is one that needs occasional stroking. So for our producers, Andrew Allen and Brian Kroc, and also don't forget, subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, any major podcast outlet, and like us on Facebook at Facebook.com. So we will be back with you when August 21st rolls around right here at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.